far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we review Right Stuff products and discuss the latest James Bond movie, Spectre. Time we hopped on the recording, it was like literally last month, right?
Yeah, I just, when I logged on, I got a spam message, I think, from Sean Ryan. I think his account must have gotten hacked.
Oh, really? I didn't get that message. That's weird.
Yeah, I'll copy and paste it to you, but I didn't actually click the link, but it looked like it was the sort of thing that would be like a spam message. It's like Googling my username or something.
Okay.
It's weird.
Huh.
And this is from like mid last month, February 16, so it must have been some time before then that was the last time that I was on.
Okay.
It looks like February 6th.
You got spammed by Sean Ryan and not me.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
He picks you over me to be the better podcaster to spam.
Yeah.
I feel so hurt by that. I'm so insecure. Nah, that's no biggie. All right, so what do we got on our agenda today? It was really just like us reviewing Right stuff that they sent us. You wanted to talk about the Bond movie Spectre from like what, 4 months ago?
Right, it came out in November, but I only saw it maybe a week or two ago at the Dollar Theater here, or $2 Theater. But
okay,
yeah. I guess we can do that first and then do the Right Stuff. Do you remember anything about it, the movie? It's been a while for you, huh?
It's been a while for me, yeah. I figure we'd start off with the Right Stuff since it's like anime related. And then okay. People will listen to that and be like, all right, they're not talking about anime, so then they'll just cut it off.
Okay, we'll do the Right Stuff first then.
I think that's the most important part.
So there's, I guess we're going to talk mainly about the special features on the Blu-ray discs that were sent for Gundam and the DVDs for Copra.
Yeah.
So the Copra had a Bleachy Terasawa interview. Did you see that?
Don't we got to do introductions first?
Oh yeah, that's right. Welcome
that we
to
don't
the
really forget.
Yeah, welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. I'm John Jones, and my co-host is Zionic Freak.
Woo!
And this is our first sponsored podcast where we've gotten free products from Right Stuff.
Well, let's put it this way. You got your free product first, and then it took me 3 weeks to get mine.
Right. It took a while for the stuff to get here for both of us, but even longer for you. And,
yeah. And I'm still hearing that echo. Go away.
I muted my mic, so I thought it would go away, but...
You know what's always...
It's not on my end. Okay, it's not picking up on the recording.
I don't think it's picked. Mine's muted now. Man, whatever. I'm just going to keep talking. Because it's not going to pick up on your end. It's generally always mine. But anyways, yeah. So I got the order number from Thane, and I was like, he made it sound like in the email that we were supposed to get both the orders and somehow at the same time. And I was like, okay. So obviously they sent them both at the same time. And then it was like, the order was in Iowa for like a week, according to that tracking number. And then it got sent to Arizona, and I was like, okay, like I should be getting something on my end too. And then the package came to you and you're like, well, I got my stuff. Did you get your stuff? And I'm like, no, So then for about 3 weeks, a Vmail tag of me going, hey, Thane, what's up, buddy? Did you send it off yet? What's going on? And it turned out they apparently, quote, lost the order. And so then he had to go and process another one, which took a while for some reason. But then I finally got it in. But what was interesting was the fact that he said he sent it out earlier that week, and then he sent me a tracking number like a few days later. And then the tracking number was basically like saying my order was going to come in 2 days. And then I finally got it.
Yeah. So you did eventually get the items, though, at least.
Yeah. And it's free. So we both got the whole collection on Blu-ray for Mobile Suit Gundam, the TV series, the first set for Zeta Gundam, and then the Cobra box set, plus the two DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the Zeta, I got it, like, on my birthday, February 9th of last month, when I turned 23, mm-hmm. and it was, not officially released yet. I guess they had printed it up in advance or whatever and sent it out to us so we can review it and everything. I think by now probably it is officially released, but
I think probably by the time this episode comes out, it will be officially released by then.
Yeah.
But because I thought it had like a March date something release, which I think it's probably already passed or it's about to come up.
Yeah, it's probably sometime this week. But
yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, our thing here is that, you know, I'm actually going through the second collection of Mobile Suit Gundam since those are the episodes I still have to see. So I started doing that. I got past the episode where it's the battle for Odessa. So I'm going on to the next episode, which is like Kai meets the girl that's the spy or something. Because I kind of know the stories through the compilation movies because I've seen those a couple of times. So, like, for me, it's like I know what happens, but the TV show, it's like
the full story.
Yeah, well, yeah. it's not the condensed version, and it's not – it's the movies are the less toyetic version. Because, like, what I saw when they fought the Black TriStars was, like, the G-Armor was in there. So then, like, there's that whole thing where, like, the Gundam is inside the G-Armor, so then we have to, like – you know, it's got to come out of the G armor somehow, and then Sailor can fight, and so can Armoro. And I'm like, well, that's how Bandai makes their toys or their money off this show, is to sell those toys back then. And this did, and I was actually surprised because, like, the Gundam Blu-rays did come with, maybe it's the same for the DVDs, is they came with the English dub for the old Bandai DVDs. So I got to hear in English the Black TriStars, which they all sound like Texan rednecks.
Yeah, it does come with the English version. The original DVDs, I think I heard they were only English audio, the first ones that came out.
I have the first and the third DVD of those, and I do believe you're right. I haven't watched those DVDs in a long time, but I believe they were just English only. I have to go back and check.
Whereas this has, you know, dual audio.
Yeah, so really like the... the specials for this, I think, just really came from the Japanese sets, maybe. Well, I know, like, we watched the 30th anniversary Gundam interviews. That's on the first disc of the second collection.
Right.
And that's basically just like this – they brought in Okawa or Yaz, Tomino, the mech design for Gundam. It's like Okara, I think. And it's just them kind of like – and then, of course, like the background artist – and it's just really them just, like, kind of like, well, Tomino was really mean to us when we tried making changes. And Tomino was like, I got really mad when they tried making changes. That was, like, 50% of that conversation.
Yeah, most of it was about how Tomino got angry a lot.
He's like, these are really good artists, but I got angry because they were changing things. And he was talking about how, like, Yaz would, like, work with the animators instead of Tomino. And then he'd be like... you know, he'll be getting upset because, like, Yaz is telling them to take Haro out of the storyboard thing because it's not going to work. And I'm like, you know, you're supposed to consult this with me. I'm the director. And
yeah. Well, he said, like, Yasuhiko is a genius as well in there.
And then there was stuff about how I think it was Sunrise that approached them. No, it was Studio Neue that approached them at Mech Designs, and they're like, we don't like them. But they found a nice way to tell them that so they can keep their designs because they're easier to animate.
They said something like it caused problems because they had to tell them no.
Yeah, but it was the fact that their design ideas were way more technical for like a TV show they're trying to produce on a weekly basis, which makes sense.
And then they were like, they're talking they just kept talking about how bad various designs that the other people involved were, you know, making.
Uh-huh.
They were like, this design's too goofy, it's too simple, and it's like kind of amazing how these guys all seem to not get along at all.
Yeah, and...
And they, like, remember their grudges from 30 years earlier, because this was made for the 30th anniversary edition in 2009. And they all remembered, like, oh, this guy said this, and he made my Haro get removed from the scene, and I'll never forgive him.
Grow the hell up. it was the fact that Okara was, like, working with, like, on Yatterman, so everything was really, like, cartoonish and happy, and... I guess he was doing that show in Gundam at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So he kept parading his designs over, and Tonomino was like, you know, this is a different show. I'm not allowing this. Come up with something darker and meaner looking. And then he's always like, well, then I had to come up with something darker and meaner looking. And I gave him this design, and he was happy with it. So that's what we went with.
And then there was one part where they're talking about, like, someone gave designs to someone else. And then the other person used those designs, and then the person who gave the designs to them got pissed off because they didn't change their designs. And it's like, what is going to satisfy these people? They're all angry about everything, even when the other people do what they want.
But that's the beauty of the business, John. It's like, you want to work in anime? This is what you got to deal with. It's dealing with other nerds, in a sense, that make cartoons for a living. Like, you think nerds will never get along, even if, like, in a professional level setting, they won't get along ever. This is how it is.
And notice, Yasuhiko said something like, after this, I wanted to get away from Gundam forever, but then I decided to make the origin, and I just can't escape Gundam because it's captured me or something.
And then, like, Tomino was talking about how, like, he feels like he's, like, the greatest creative genius because he added simple words to the title of Gundam. And he was, like, just talking about that's how we thought at the time. That's still how he thinks about himself today. Who knows?
He was like...
He was like, you know, Gundam is just, like, this, you know, plural, word or something. And...
Yeah, I think he said Gundam's a proper noun. Itself,
it's not that exciting, but if I add mobile suit to it, a very simple word, I feel like I can make anything, and I'm the smartest genius ever.
Yeah, he seemed really proud of this mobile suit. He was like, oh, this term mobile suit, that can apply to any one of these robots. So that means it's a really great term, and it's the greatest term in the whole series, and it's just amazing. Yeah. Really?
And then when he talks about, like, all the problems with the show, it was like they show clips from the Doan Island episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like the heavily regarded, like, worst episode. And I'll be honest, like, when I saw that on my downloaded versions of Gundam, like, it's really not that bad of an episode. Come on, we've seen worse.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised he let them include clips of that. Because the actual episode, and I guess we can say some negative stuff here, is not included on the Blu-ray, which is disappointing because it's never included on the U.S. releases. But I guess it's not really Wrightstuff's fault. It's probably the fault of Tomino here because he seems to really hate the episode. But he was saying, oh, well, we all managed to work together even though we had our differences and we produced some flawed products. And this episode was terrible, but they still aired it on TV, which was shocking to me. And
yeah.
He seemed to think like that it was going to be so bad that they wouldn't air it on TV. Which is, like, kind of naive because Japan airs unfinished animation all the time. Like, the new Yatterman series, I remember they aired the last episode of that. I didn't see it, but I remember everyone on Twitter saying, like, oh, it was just a bunch of unfinished stills that they used as the art for it, and it was actually aired on TV like this. So, like, Japan will air literally anything.
I mean, you know, if Japan can get away with airing the last two episodes of Evangelion, then anything's possible. It's like you go and, you know, go on Amazon and you're like, how do these people become published writers? That means anybody can write a book as long as it can get published. So, yeah, anybody can do animation by that theory.
Yeah, I guess so.
But yeah, it's interesting because like they showed clips of the Doan Island, and that's the only really technically the only like visual release we've got of it in America. It's on the Elnet anniversary interview.
Yeah, and the clips they
like
showed,
like,
the clips they showed of it were not that bad. I thought it would be like the really horrible scenes from it or something. With like there was some scene with Izaku that people hated, right? But the clips they showed were just like kind of generic. It didn't look any different than a normal Gundam scene. Oh, looks like we're having technical difficulties.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Anyway, I was talking about how the clips they showed of it in the documentary were not that bad, you know, of the of the episode. I thought they would show like the worst scene of it or something, but it was just some sort of minor shots that were not that notable as being that great or terrible either way.
Yeah, it's interesting that like they didn't. Yeah, because I guess the call dropped when I was describing like the scene I remember was when the Gundam launches with, like, I think, like, the hammer or something, and then the next scene he's got the bazooka or the beam rifle or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, one of the technical screw-ups, obviously, but that's, like, the only one that comes to my mind. But, yeah, like, really, that's, like, technically the only release that you're ever going to see legally in America of Donut Island. It's through that interview, and you have to skim through whatever the time thing was on that interview, and I'm not going to pull it up to find out.
Yeah.
But it's in there in case anybody wants to watch 5 seconds of it.
It'll be obvious when you're watching.
Standing there in static image.
It'll be obvious when you're watching because he says the name of the episode, the Kokoru's Don Island or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And then they show it. So, but yeah, and they had some other clips from the show in there as well, and like of Char and Amuro.
And yeah, that was the ending. Fencing match between them when they were and it was showing like basically stills of Yasuhiko's like pencil art, and like, you know, he's such a good artist because like when his pencil moves, like the image comes to life, like it's really animation because it's just a rough sketch of that.
Uh-huh.
And like they kind of put it together in a storyboard setting where they just showed shot by shot of just the rough sketches putting that scene together, and that was really interesting too.
Yeah, and they also, I mean, since this was a 30th anniversary retrospective kind of thing, even though all the interviews were about 0079, they included some video from the other more recent stuff as well. Like they had some clips from 8th MS Team and
Seed. 00 wasn't in it.
Yeah, I don't remember that being in there.
But, I don't remember it's really Seed and 8th MS Team.
Yeah, I think it was just those two. They might have had something from like 00883, but I might be wrong.
I don't remember 00883, but you might be right.
Oh, you know what it was? It was an igloo. They had a little shot of igloo in it, I think.
Oh, that's right, because that was talking about the part when there was like, you know, the universe is so expansive, because I know Yasuhiko was talking about like him writing the origin. It's like, oh, there's actually a lot to this than us just making a quick TV show and then just casting it aside, which is why Gundam has been around for as long as it is, because you can keep adding to it.
Yeah. And then they talked about the origin of some of the designs for the characters, and they're saying the Federation is supposed to look like Americans and the Zeon is supposed to look like Germans.
Yeah. Or like a German design and the American design, which actually makes sense.
Uh-huh. And also, the main characters, they're talking about, like, why they decided to make them young or whatever, like, so they could grow and become heroes. Like, they're supposed to look relatable at first and then later on become, new type heroes that save the world from Zeon or whatever by the end of the series. And they seem kind of like they're talking about Shock, not Shakti. What is it? The other Indian, the character that's with Char,
Lala,
right? Yeah, I was thinking of Shakti from Zeta, from Victory for some reason, but yeah, they mentioned that she looks Indian, which I guess is true, and that's like the first character that's you know not supposed to look like German or American, or I don't know. The characters, none of them have like normal names. They're all like Tamino names, so it's hard to tell what race they're supposed to be. But maybe the military outfits are just based on American and German, and the characters are all Japanese. I'm not really sure, but
that's interesting.
At one point, doesn't Amuro move to America though? In Zeta, he lives in like Wyoming or something.
Yeah, he's under house arrest in Wyoming because he's a new type.
Yeah,
that was what I remember from Zeta.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't really remember anything else about the interview that I. Like those are, we kind of talked about the stuff that stuck out on it. I mean, and that interview is like 6 years old, and who knows if they're still like talking with each other? Probably not. They probably got together, and it looked like they filmed it separately, like at separate occasions, and worked it all together in editing to make it a complete like story of them talking.
I noticed they had Yasuhiko say something like, "The other day I talked to Tamino, and it was the first time in a really long time." Like they don't talk much to each other. Probably Tamino doesn't get along with the other guys because of how he acts.
Yeah, and I imagine he's probably like, if he was hard to work with back then, he's got to be like super hard to work with now because he's getting old, and that's just how old people are.
Well, I think that the G-Reco people are probably all, you know, totally different people from who worked on the original. It would be interesting to see their experiences with Tamino and like compare it to the experiences that people had with the original that are talked about here.
Yeah, that's actually I'm kind of wondering if like the people who worked on G-Reco are probably like, we get to work with Tamino's like Tamino Sensei or something, and you know, we know that he's above us, so we're going to do everything he tells us to do. But the thing is, that's probably why G-Reco came out the way it is. Whereas the original Gundam, it's like, you know, nobody's like higher, or there's no kind of, it seemed like, cause you have sort of like a caste system in Japanese society anyways, which is why we have Sensei and all that. But I think like with them working together, cause they were just like brand new working in the anime industry at the time, or like have like some experience, but like they're all kind of the same level. So they all, like there was some sort of, I would imagine like there was some sort of like level of you know, like Tomino's the director, so yeah, we gotta respect him and all that stuff. But like we're kinda having the same skill set, if not more, than he does, and this is us trying to work together. So really nobody's more like dominant than the other one, which is probably why they clash so much. So I would imagine like with G-Reco, like maybe there wasn't a lot of like clashing going on, because if he was the one working on it, and there's a bunch of like newer animators and, you know, like people newer in the anime industry that he's already highly regarded, so they're going to respect him more, which is why we got, like, I think if it was like sort of the same, like, you know, if the original people were all to work on G-Reco, it would be a different show, probably for the better, because they're clashing with each other and trying to get better ideas out there and be like, no, this is not going to work.
So this is similar to the thing that people always say about the Star Wars prequels, where it's like people needed to challenge Lucas more instead of just being like in awe of him and saying like, wow, what a great idea to everything he says.
Yeah, which is why you got those prequel movies. Because the reason why the original series is so good is the fact that there was people telling George like, okay, this idea is not going to work. You're not, you know, hot shit or anything yet. But, you know, this idea isn't going to work. We'll try to do it in this way. And then that would be the idea we got, which is why we loved the original trilogy so much.
Yeah, I still need to finish G-Reco, but I know a lot of people didn't like it here. Much. Most people seem to think it was pretty disappointing from what I saw, which is unfortunate.
I was going to point out, like, this, the Blu-rays also came with some extra stuff, including the first set had the commercial tie-ins for all the DVD boxes or the DVD sets that they did. And I didn't realize how many different covers and sets they did for the original series, because it was like they had four or five commercials. I think the fifth one was just the Blu-ray, but then they had like the same actors in the same scene of them singing the opening to the Gundam theme, but then they would be like, here's a box set of the first set, and there's two different artworks for it, and then the second one has got two different Char artworks. Which I guess sort of makes sense, because Bandai's got to make that sweet money. So, like, you have an option to get one or the other, or all of them, and pay them a ton of money for those sets.
Yeah, Japanese Blu-rays are very expensive.
I didn't know how. I didn't know like what those DVD sets look like in Japan.
I'm sure there's people who love Gundam enough that they bought all the different versions, spent thousands of dollars on it.
Yes, that's how that business model works. Whereas at Right Stuff, you're spending way less. You're not getting a box set, but everything on a DVD that can fit, that's all you really need.
Yeah, these are and very even like, small Blu-rays, but yeah, they fit everything yeah. they need to fit in a small space so you can store it on your shelf more easily.
Yeah, and I also noticed, like, I know, like, with Bandai, like, some of the DVD sets that they did, they always had inside artwork, and this doesn't. But, I mean, like, that's, I'm not like, oh, it's, you know, a terrible release because I don't have artwork inside of it. It's, like, it's still a solid, like, cover. Like, you look on the back, it's telling you what episodes are on there. And then, like, also the bonus, like, the episodes summary. Like, that's all you really need to know. Yeah. So, that I'm good with that.
Have you looked at the Zeta Blu-ray yet? Because I have not.
The Zeta Blu-ray, the only extras that it has is just a clean opening and ending okay. on this set.
And it's not the original opening and ending, is it? It's the American version?
It is the American version. I guess my only complaint is, well, at least speaking with Zeta, because I've got, you know, now I've got both the original releases. Like, I've always had, I had the individual slips that Bandai put out after that Zeta Gundam box set, like in 2004, that I was too poor to get at the time because I was a high school student, but then I wound up buying Vikus off of his. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, yeah, because like with those DVDs, I remember specifically like with those DVDs that when you plug it in, it has one of the like the ending songs or maybe one of the image songs plays like in the menu, like on a loop. But of course, it doesn't have the original opening and endings to those DVDs. It's always the instrumental one, and that's exactly what we got with the Right Stuff Blu-ray set too. So it feels like you're just getting the like an upgraded version of those Bandai sets that came out, you know, 10 years ago. But in terms of I actually watched the subtitles and the dub, like because I had them on, and it's not they don't do dub titles. They're separate subtitles, separate way of reading it than the dub titles that they did with the Bandai releases. There's uniqueness in that. Obviously, Right Stuff cares.
Well, didn't they have to actually translate
it properly?
With Bandai, didn't they have to re-release it later with different subtitles because people were pissed off at them or something? I might be wrong, but I think that happened.
Yeah, I think that was it because I know there was. I thought it was like there was an error in the subbing, but I think it might have just been the dub title issues. And then they put it out where like. They kind of tried more, but I felt like they felt about the same from when I checked it out like last time.
Yeah, that's not not likely to happen with JoJo because I guess Warner Brothers doesn't really care about people being upset about the dub title issue. If anything,
no, because they're just like, we license this and you're going to buy it regardless if you want it.
Right. If anything, the people who are boycotting the DVD release, like Chibi Goku, are probably going to prevent future seasons of JoJo's from getting released over the issue. I mean, they should be glad that we got one translation and not be demanding a second one, because if they're going to be demanding that a company that barely knows how to do an anime translation is like going to do two of them, it's like a really probably a bit too much to expect from Warner Brothers. And they're just not going to release any more of it at all.
Yeah, cause they make more of their money from freaking DC titles and other movies. Like, publishing anime or putting on anime here is like a part of their income. It's not the majority of it. So regardless if, like, however they want, they feel like putting JoJo's out, they couldn't care less. Because, like, they're a larger company. That's just one little section of it that they, you know, threw together to maybe throw together. I don't know. But
well, remember there was a company
called...
Release
JoJo.
Remember there was a company called S'more? I don't know sure if you remember this company.
Yeah, they're the ones that put out Galaxy Express.
Right. And,
the TV series. The movies are done by Discotech.
And Bobobo. And they put them out and, like, CG, he left, like, a bunch of comments on their Facebook group. insulting them because they didn't put high enough video quality on the DVDs or something.
Yeah, and, that's what I heard about him.
And they deleted his comments because they were too rude or something. And then they just, like, stopped releasing anime. And like, if that's going to be your attitude towards these companies, where you're just going to berate them and boycott them and talking about how terrible they are, they're just going to stop releasing stuff, and we're only going to end up with Funimation. So really, even if there are some minor flaws on these discs, like they don't have the original opening and ending, you have to acknowledge that there's, you know, maybe there's a reason for that. There are some constraints on what they could do, like because of Neil Sedaka being involved. So don't boycott this release just because it doesn't have the opening and ending or whatever. It's still a great anime, and it's a classic. And if you like mecha anime, you have to see Zeta Gundam. That's my pitch for Zeta Gundam.
Actually, I didn't hear anything you said because the call cut out.
Okay, really?
Yes, because well, Skype, we're updating your experience. No.
Pretty terrible connection today, huh?
Yeah, okay. I don't know if it's on my end or your end.
Well, anyway, I was saying that people should buy this even though the original opening and ending aren't on it, because it's not really Right Stuff's fault. It's Neil Sedaka who, I guess, composed a song that it's similar to, and mm-hmm. So it's sort of like how they can't include the, you know, the Japanese music for Kai anymore on the Blu-rays after the first release, because it turned out to be based on, you know, another artist's songs or whatever, and then mm-hmm. it turned out to be plagiarism or whatever. They just can't do it here because of copyright issues like that, and so
these are copyright issues, no less.
Yeah. So even though this has not got the original music for the opening and ending, it's still a good anime that people should check out if they like Gundam, because it inspired a lot of later Gundam, and it's one of the best series in the UC timeline.
I'm still pulling for that Victory Gundam to be the best, but that's just me. But no, Zeta Gundam's good.
Zeta
Gundam
great.
Took me like a. I mean, Zeta Gundam and Victory Gundam took me a while to watch, but like it was Zeta Gundam that really took me a long time to watch all of it. Because I guess I've explained this story like a while ago. Wait, did our connection cut out?
No, I can hear you.
Okay, great. I started watching, I got a hold of some of Zeta Gundam episodes when I was in high school, so this was like 2002, I think. And I didn't get the last individual Zeta Gundam DVD until like Christmas of 2008. So for 6 years, it took me to watch a 52 episode show, and in chunks, no less. I downloaded whatever episodes were online that I could find. And then when the sets came out, that's when I was like, okay, I'm definitely going to just try to find the sets as cheap as possible, which I did at like Best Buy and other places. And I was always trying to find that last DVD, and then I eventually just broke down and paid $20-something for it on Amazon or eBay. I think I got that actually for a Christmas gift. I did. So like it's really for me, like I think what makes a series special is the fact of like my interest and how I'm able to kind of hunt things down. And then also same goes for Victory Gundam, which like I still got those Chinese subbed, bad real media quality stuff in high school also from a friend of mine. And then I wind up, downloading the series when I got out of high school and watching it, like in a period of like maybe a month or so, but it actually took about a month for it to download.
There's a, game store here in the Phoenix area in Gilbert called Game Zone that has a DVD anime section, a lot of imported stuff.
Yeah.
And they do have the a lot of the Gundam DVDs from Japan, and they have the Victory Gundam and Gundam Seed there, like individual DVDs of it. It's always cool to look at, but I've never gotten around to buying any of it. I don't know that I would bother, but I did buy a Mazing Kaiser versus Dark General import DVD there one time, which for some reason nice. That was not included on the Mazing Kaiser DVDs. But it is a pretty cool OVA. I just wish I knew what was being said in it. But
I mean, I've got a couple of those. I got a Voltus 5 VHS tape of the first three episodes, and all I know from it is that a lot of civilians die, and like there's a lot of shouting, and eventually the bad guy loses somehow from the robot combining. That's all I know.
Is that an 80s anime?
Oh, that's a 70s anime. 70s. Voltus 5, yeah.
Is that? I'm trying to remember if that's a... Like, I think there was an anime that was supposed to be in, like, the original basis for Voltron, but then they decided not to. Like a different lion or something. I can't remember what anime it was.
Dude, I would not know that.
Oh, it's not Voltus 5, though. It's something else.
Well, Voltus 5 came out earlier than Voltron, or should I say Go Lion, if you want to get technical.
Yeah. I think I'll probably find it on the Voltron Wikipedia page.
Okay.
It's, okay, they were going to do Daltonius originally.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the explanation that Wikipedia gives. This could all be bullshit, but it's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it could be deleted by tomorrow or in a year from now.
It's been on there for a while, but it says, the Japanese future robot Daltonius series was originally mm-hmm. planned to be adapted by World Events Production as part of Voltron. When requesting mm-hmm. master tapes from Toei for translation purposes, World Event Production's producers requested the ones with the lion. Mistakenly, Toei then processed to ship World Events copies of Beast King Go Lion, another combining robot cartoon featuring lion-shaped fighters. Because the World Events Production producers greatly preferred Go Lion to Daltonius, the Go Lion episodes were adapted instead, going on to become the most popular portion of the original Voltron run. A third version/series of Voltron based on yet another Japanese series, Lightspeed Electroid Albagus, was also in production but dropped when World Event Productions joined with Toei to make a new Go Lion-based shows due to the serious popularity over the Die Rider run. So basically, they just had a translation error or whatever, and it ended up being one series over another. But
we're not going to correct it. Forget it. We got to get an American show made. So we're just going to stick to what we got.
Yeah, I do like the Go Lion release that came out from, I think it was CPM a few years ago.
Okay.
Maybe like 10 years ago at this point, but it was like what you said about that anime you just mentioned where a whole lot of civilians die. It's surprisingly violent compared to the US Voltron. There's like people being cut in half and stuff.
I thought that Go Lion release came out from ADV.
Well, the thing is, I think that there was the company that did Gaigar, they had to halt the dub halfway through because they started putting all their resources into Go Lion and what was the other one? Die Rugger, the other Voltron series. And,
okay.
And putting out those 10 box sets of the Voltron dub as well. And I think it was CPM, but maybe it was Media Blasters. But
okay.
But yeah, that was like one of the last things I guess Media Blasters did. Media Blasters not very active anymore, if they're even still around at all.
I think they're still around doing Asian movies or Asian porn. I don't know.
So
I had nothing else to add to the Gundam Blu-rays, and we've already gone way off topic on our review of these.
Yeah, well, at least we're talking about anime. We can talk about the Cobra interview with Buichi Terasawa. Did you watch that?
I saw that. Like, I got those sets, the Cobra sets, when they came out from Right Stuff like 2 years ago. Okay. So I did see it, but I don't remember too much about it.
So you have two copies of these?
Yeah, and I'll find some creative way to have something to do with my Cobra copy that I got from Right Stuff. Since I do panels,
mm-hmm.
I plan on doing some panels at Anime Week in Atlanta.
Yeah,
I'll probably just give it out there as a prize for one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes.
So, yeah, the thing that is unique about this interview is that Tarasawa is smoking a cigarette the whole time. That was the main notable thing to me.
I'll tell you what, like, when they had the interview in his office, I was like, damn, I want my office to look just like that. And there's like half of it is basically like all the females in like his Cobra mangas in his series. And they got some big booty bitches. What? Reminds me of that song.
1, 2, 3.
I got big booty bitches, big booty bitches. I got big booty bitches, big booty bitches. Big booty bitches, big booty bitches. Big booty bitches, big booty bitches. I got 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 big booty bitches, big booty bitches.
I'm gonna have to edit that out and put the real song in.
They asked him who the women in Cobra are based on, and he was like, oh, lots of real women or something like that. But then he also said that some of them are named after his ex-girlfriends as well.
Yeah, what I remember from the interview was the fact that I think it was he was doing shoujo manga, and
right.
The publisher was like, hey, I don't think girls are into this. You need to do like shonen manga or like do stuff for guys or seinen. And he's just like, all right. And then he apparently got, like, the motivation to become a manga artist from, like, a girlfriend he was with at the time.
Yeah, she was, I guess, reading a shoujo, and she told him, like, oh, there's a contest in this magazine for...
Yeah.
For art, put your own art and make your own manga. And he's like, okay, whatever, I could use some money. And he entered, and he got, like, the runner-up or something, and he said he got...
Yeah.
150,000 yen, and he said it was a better paycheck than most businessmen get or something, and that the best prize was 1 million yen, which he said would be 10 million yen in modern yen, which just shows how much the Japanese central bank has destroyed the currency, that it's worth one-tenth as much as it was just, I don't know when this was produced, I think probably 2013 or so, the interview.
Yeah, because the sets came out 2 years ago, so that was 2014.
Okay.
So, like, I would imagine the interview was conducted as the DVDs were being brought over, or the series was being brought over to America.
Right, because he mentions as one of the questions, like, what do you think about it coming to America? And he's like, oh, it's great. I always wanted Americans to see it. But yeah, then he that's 35 years worth of inflation, I guess. But
yeah,
he never got the first place, and he sent a letter to the magazine that published the shoujo manga. I don't know which shoujo magazine it was, but he asked them, why am I not getting first place? What's wrong with you people? And they're like, oh, well, it's because you're drawing from a male's perspective. And and then he's like, oh, right, I guess I should do manga for males then. And so he did. And then that's how Cobra came about, I guess. He decided
Cobra, to... Goku Midnight, Tenku. Oh,
yeah.
Man, some really good stuff.
Yeah, and so that's why he switched over to doing stuff for males, because I guess the idea is that generally males are going to make stories that males want to read, and females are going to make stories that females want to read.
Yeah, because Cobra is a power fantasy. It's a fantastic power fantasy for guys. It's like, you know, you're...
Skype always has to have a problem, doesn't it? This is the third time this episode. He's going to have some editing to do when he gets this file. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to host the call. Let me try.
Okay. The last part I got was you said Cobra is a power fantasy.
All right.
Okay, so you're hosting now?
Yeah, I'm hosting now. I don't even know if my internet's better than yours, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll try it out and see how it works.
Yeah. So, all right. The last part I got was when you were saying that Cobra is a power fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, it's a power fantasy for guys. You know, like it's, you know, Cobra's a guy that's always in danger. He's on the run. He's got a bounty. It's like Space James Bond, essentially. He gets women that want to do him all the time.
Right.
He's different all the time. So, yeah, it's all good, clean, big booty fun. And
he acknowledges that the thing with the women is kind of based on Bond in the interview. And he says, like, oh, well, James Bond is like male dream because he meets a bunch of different women and sleeps with them and that they all die. And then he's like, oh, wait, what am I saying? That's terrible. And he starts laughing.
All we know is that the feminist community better not get a hold of that interview.
Yeah, or anything relating to Cobra, probably, because they say it objectifies women. It's a character science, being as they are.
You figure they would care enough, but they don't. And
yeah,
that's fine with me.
Yeah, well, luckily, I think that the social justice warrior crowd has not yet found out about anime, which is a good thing, because
I hope they remain clueless as long as possible to that.
Yeah, it's good that anime is still niche enough that it's not, not constantly being accused of sexism the same way video games are. Because there's plenty of ground to criticize anime, but I'd rather they didn't start doing that. The last thing I want is anime.
These are issues we are already aware of, and you don't need to preach to us how you just found out about this.
Yeah.
And I guess they don't bother to go to, like, I guess anime is being sold less in brick-and-mortar stores, so they don't ever bother to know where that is. So I guess they just always walk past it and just go to the video game section and just start critiquing covers like crazy and how everything's wrong. And we're over there with our Funimation section at Best Buy going, thank God they're over there and they're not here.
Yeah. I'm sure sooner or later there will be some sort of, like, Anita Sarkeesian of anime or something.
Oh, but God help us.
I just hope there is not. Imagine a episode like that Law & Order episode that we watched the other day, the Special Victims Unit one with Gamergate. Imagine something like that with anime. That would be just so funny.
You want to hear something funny, and I guess this is a good way to segue to our next segment, because unless you want to say something else about Cobra, but I was just going to mention that, like, in my documentary video class yesterday, that, like, my professor / advisor, I think he really likes me, and I'm actually doing a creative mini documentary on – I decided not to do anime because I was like – it's sort of like, for me, I could talk about – obviously, I can talk about anime. We do a podcast about it. So for me, it's just kind of like if I did a documentary, it would just be a cheap way for me going, this is why I like this. This is why it's awesome, blah, 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 blah. And it wouldn't be – because I know everything, or I know a lot. But so I decided to do mine on the evolution of 2D and 3D fighting games over the past 20 years as my little mini documentary. And I have some good ideas about that. And I feel like – because it's like – I play fighting video games growing up since my teen years, so it's always like been near me, and I would like to go back and look at it and see how that affects the culture. So that's what I'm currently working on. And so then I tell him that, and then my teacher's just like, you guys know that, like, and he starts praising me that I have, like, the blog I have to make for this semester for a digital writing media thing. Like, I'm basically doing anime reviews on it because I have to come up with something like once or twice a week. But he starts praising me that I know all this stuff about video games and anime. And mind you, I'm probably the only nerd in there in this class. And this is a majority female school, so most of them are not nerds. So it's kind of like, you know, he was just like, you know, praising me that, like, I'm such an I'm the biggest expert he knows about anime and video games when I talk to him. And he's praising me about, like, it's like it's some major accomplishment and how, like, I like this stuff. But at the same time, it's like, I guess I'm too old to care how cool I am. But however, it's like, rather I not be singled out as the nerd already. And it's like, I'm glad that you praised me for this, but this doesn't accomplish anything but people like, oh, he's the nerdy guy, but I couldn't care less anyways. But at the same time, it's like, I kind of want to be on some good terms with these folks in here, but oh well.
Well, I guess they'll now know of you as the guy who's the expert on fighting games.
Yeah.
If that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know.
That's fine. No, you, like, the documentary, like, here's, like, because it's a bunch of girls, and it's really, like, people in my class, like, or the school, it's not everyone, but it's, like, the majority environment of they're there to get a grade and get out of college as quick as possible, because it's just, like, one, they're trying to, like, get in a short, like, the shortcut way. And, you know, I'm, like, wanting to take my project seriously, do research on it, and I swear, like, maybe, like, four or five of them are doing documentaries on their dogs. I guess you could do a documentary on a dog and how you love your pet. But that's such a, like, I'm sorry, but that's such a quick, like, I literally cannot think of anything interesting I want to talk about because I have no hobbies outside of just doing the same girl stuff and going to the mall. So I'm just going to pick something in my family to do. Okay, dogs, that'll work. And I'll try to preach it up and make it as positive as possible. But it's not just one person. It was like three or four of them doing this. And I'm just, but it's all coming from this same group of girls. Cause they just, that's just, they're like their own little clique. And I'm not saying it's bad to do a documentary about your dogs, but like when that's the only idea, I feel like that was the only idea they just like threw together at the last minute. I could be wrong. And I don't want to sound like I'm sexist or anything, but I just found that ridiculous.
Why don't you tell your story about the women don't know how to fill up their cars or whatever?
Oh, yeah, that was... Yeah, I got to keep my comments about that quiet, so...
Oh, okay.
No, I think it's just the one or two girls that I made that comment about, like, oh, it's the difference between men and guys, or girls and guys, is the fact that we care about filling up our cars, and that one girl just got so pissed at me, and said, called me sexist and everything. It's like, well, how do you forget to fill up gas? And it's like, I'm sorry, I see, like, it seems like a majority of women that I know kind of do that. It's not all of them, but there are some guys that forget to fill up on gas, too. I just don't see how people forget that, but... Anyways, this has nothing to do with Right Stuff Anime, because this is what we do, is go off on tangents.
So I guess we can talk about Spectre now, huh?
Yeah, that works. Yo! Alright, so this is our promo for RightStuffAnime.com, and I am on the website right now. I'm going to see what's on sale. I see that Gundam that they have is on sale right now. That I'm looking at on prices for pre-orders for Gundam Double Zeta. Even one for the new translation Zeta Gundam movies. And since we talked about Zeta Gundam, the Blu-ray, they got that on sale for $48.74. I'm recording this as of March 5th, so I'm not sure if this is still going to go on until I put out this podcast episode, which should be shortly soon. They do have, however, you can add to the cart to get the second collection for Zeta Gundam at $48.74 for Blu-ray. And $10 less than that for DVD. So definitely check that out. They got a vertical sale on going on right now. So definitely go on the site and check it out. Buy from them. Don't buy anywhere else or we will find you. And it's the right choice to make to buy from Right Stuff. And I don't want anything else. So, alright, that's it. We're done with this ad.
Scene of the movie is set in Mexico City during the Day of the Dead, and they're all wearing the skeleton masks and walking around, and then there's a chase and a helicopter scene and everything, and Bond gets in trouble for getting involved in this mission in Mexico City without permission from MI6, and he he gets put on leave because they don't like that he's getting involved there without their permission, and so they put this this thing in his blood that's supposed to track him. But then the guy who puts it in there, Q, is not actually really reporting back accurately to the headquarters about what Bond is up to, because Bond goes off on his own again, even though he's being tracked, and tries to figure out the secrets that have been plaguing him from the past movies. And he has like a video from the past M that he shows to Moneypenny as well to get her to also help him with his investigation.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Europe, and do you remember what country it is? Maybe it's Germany or something.
It was Italy that they have the secret Spectre meeting that he gets the ring off the guy in Mexico City.
Yeah.
From what I remember, and that was a cool helicopter like fight battle on there or whatever.
Yeah.
It was good. And then also like apparently like five city blocks of Mexico City get obliterated for some reason.
Oh yeah. That's why he gets in trouble, because
this movie obviously has the like another Blofeld in it, which is apparently, what was it? I forgot his backstory, but apparently he knows Bond in some way, or like his fam. Oh, gosh. Yeah,
we'll get to that at the end. But he turns out to be behind everything that's been going on. It was all like his master plan the last several movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the like adopted brother of Bond, because Bond's parents died in a climbing accident. Mm-hmm. And then Bond got taken in by Blofeld's father and got more attention than Blofeld. And so Blofeld is like this like brat that's pissed off at Bond because he got more attention than him growing up. And
yeah.
So he like decides to form a multinational organization and to try to take over the world and get access to everyone's data. They have like this sort of NSA type organization that's going to be run by the G7 or the UN or something, and that's one of the big plot points. And somehow he's behind that, and he wants to be able to spy on everyone as part of his, you know, his efforts of world domination and everything. And then of course Bond destroys his plans and blows up his base and gets Blofeld arrested at the end. And so. But well, there's also the scene where Bond plays chess with a guy or something, and then the guy shoots himself in the head.
Yeah, that was the old guy that was like in the second, because in the second Bond movie or at the end of the first one of Casino Royale, he was the guy that was like sort of Le Chiffre's second man or something.
Yeah,
and then Bond shoots him in the foot, and that was like the cliffhanger ending of Casino Royale, which led into Quantum. And then I thought that guy died, but I guess he didn't. He's been like in an isolated like cabin in like Austria or something for like however many years.
Yeah, that was the country I was trying to think of earlier. I wasn't sure what country it was.
Yeah, but he has a daughter that he wants Bond to protect. And then
right. That's
what's have that Jeep airplane chase or whatever down the mountain, and he gets her, and then they like the base you're talking about with Blofeld is out in the middle of the freaking desert. And supposedly she's part of it too, because her parents were part of that society for Blofeld, and like they go to some sort of like, there's these clues they go to some sort of like house or hostel in like South America, and that's when they find like the Bond's about to shoot a mouse, and it goes in between the wall or whatever, and then he tears down the wall, and it turns out like it's like a secret compartment that's been abandoned for 20 years inside this hotel room. And then they have like a bunch of guns in there and everything, and they show like a video of like her parents and their purpose of like why they did the things they did.
Mm-hmm.
It was something like that. And then like Blofeld's base is like out in the middle of the freaking desert, and they blow it because it's like in some sort of like canyon, or it's like in, I don't know, but yeah, they wind up blowing it up for some reason. And oh, they wind up putting, okay, now I'm remembering this movie. Because he's being tortured because he's about to threaten to put like, No, he's got that little bitty, like, 1.1 millimeter, like, screw that he's injecting in his neck to, like, I'm going to use this to take out your eye sockets. You'll never see anything ever again. And then he gets out of it through, like, his watch, like, explodes or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's being tortured, and then I think the girl is there, like, watching him get tortured or something, and then she, like, I don't know if he has her pull the watch off him and then drop it, or if he somehow throws it off his hand, or...
Yeah, because she came over there to get, because he was like, oh, I need to tell her goodbye or something, and then, like, she got the watch from his hand, and she threw it near her computer, and it, like, exploded for...
Yeah, and then it blows up, like, the whole base, and they managed to escape, but then somehow
it's like a
Blofeld
chain reaction
survives.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, somehow Blofeld survives, and he's, like, disfigured, and then... But he comes after Bond, and the you know, after Bond gets back to the UK, they are about to hand over the authority of all the world's data to Blofeld's group, and because the new guy who is in charge after the old M died is a Blofeld's pawn, and. Mm-hmm. They have to stop that from happening, and it's one of those, you know, you have to do it in time kind of things. And
well, it was the fact that their new office is across the street from the old MI6 building from, like, the Pierce Bronson Bond saga, and so they're about to demolish it anyways because it's so old and it was already exploded from, like, one of the Daniel Craig movies. I can't remember which one, but it was Skyfall is when they finally, like, just. That's when Javier Bardem, like, blew up half the side of the building or something. And so then Bond's in there trying to find the daughter of the old guy. And he winds up getting her out in time, like, in a speedboat or something. And then they go after Blofeld. And that's, like, he has an option to kill Blofeld, but he decides to let him live and let the police take him. And that's essentially how the movie ends. But then also at the same time, because, like, the old guy M that takes over for M is the one that, like, is trying to get Bond together at some old safe house, and then they're gonna, like, overtake the new MI6 headquarters from, like, the Blofeld's pawn guy.
Yeah. Well, Blofeld's pawn, he for some reason he wants to get rid of the MI program because he thinks that if they can just access all the data, they won't need secret agents anymore.
Yeah.
Which I find weird, because, like, what are they going to do with all the data if they don't have anyone who can actually, like, you know, if they know about a terrorist from the data, don't they need someone who could, like, go in there and kill the terrorist or something? Like, you would still need the agents, it would seem to me, but whatever. That's just a minor, like...
This is a Bond plot movie, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense to begin with.
Yeah, well, you would think that they would be needed, whatever, but I guess they just want to not have the agents on their back because they, you know, they don't want anyone getting in the way of their plans for Spectre ruling the world.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and there were, I think they showed another agent at one point, didn't they, who had died or something in this, 00 some other number at one point.
I literally... do not remember.
I just remember it being surprising because they hardly ever show any other agents. I think there was, they showed another dead one in one of the movies from the 80s or 90s, but it's rare for them to show someone other than Bond.
Hmm.
But it was just a minor thing in there. I don't know how many there are supposed to be. Maybe they have, like, more explanation of the program as a whole in the books or whatever, but I've never read the books. I've only seen the movies.
I mean, the only other agents in the 00 program, the only way they ever, like, brought those up was, like, in the Roger Moore movies. And it was always Roger Moore, like, having to go and check after 006 or 008 or 005 or something. But, like, the only way, like, another 00 agent was a part of the main story was in GoldenEye when Sean Bean was 006. And that's when he, like, went rogue, and that plot of the movie that Pierce Bronson has to go and stop him.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but like it was always in the Roger Moore films that like in the very beginning, like 005 would be like dressed as a clown or something, and then like he gets assassinated, and they're
That's
like,
we
haven't heard back from this 00 agent, 007. You need to go check it out. And then he goes and checks it out, and they like, and then he finds that they're dead, which we obviously knew because of the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that like, you know, you bring that up in this movie, like because they don't do it often. But the most they've ever done it was in the Roger Moore films,
right? And that even then it was rare. I think it was just one. But yeah. They also kill off Blofeld in one of the Roger Moore movies. I remember.
Yeah, that was really dumb.
He was in like all the early movies, and then like by the time Roger Moore took over, he wasn't in hardly any of them.
Well, it was the fact that spoiler alert, I can't remember the title of the movie, but it's the opening where Bond's in a helicopter and Blofeld's controlling the helicopter with a remote control with this fat ass white cat on his lap. And then he winds up taking control of the helicopter and then shoving Blofeld down a giant like smokestack. The cat is MIA and it's probably dead or eaten by vultures at that point. And that's it. And like we had this same conversation about Blofeld's cat 3 years ago when we talked about Skyfall, because I was like, watch the cat be the new Blofeld in the next movie.
Well, they did have the cat in here.
Yeah, they did have the cat.
It was only in like one little bit of it, but it was there.
Yeah, but it was enough to be like, because they never said Blofeld's name in this movie. They just like, as soon as they had the cat, I was like, I know it's Blofeld, but it's like, you gotta confirm it. And then that was the confirmation, like, yeah, it's Blofeld. Then 5 minutes later, my new name is Blofeld. I'm the name I'm known now. But it's like, I already knew that because I've seen all these other movies.
Yeah, so it says that Blofeld appears in For Your Eyes Only. That's the one where he dies.
Okay. Slash felt like got shoved off a smokestack from the helicopter. I mean, it's a pretty big fall, and Blofeld was handicapped unless he somehow used his hover round to, like, pad his fall at the bottom of 300 feet, probably doubt it. But yeah. Hey, there's the saying, no body, no death, so we never saw a body of Blofeld die, so who knows, man.
That character, I guess, won't be appearing again unless they reboot it again. Which they always could, since this is supposed to be the last movie with Daniel Craig.
Okay.
Do you think that they're gonna reboot it again, or they'll just put a different actor in charge of Bond?
I've heard them going for like obviously another actor, because yeah, this was Daniel Craig's last movie, I think. But I've heard them going for like a black Bond, which. You know, dude, I don't really care.
Yeah, that's been the rumor.
Yeah, and then there was another actor that's like really tall that was wanting to be Bond.
Oh.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're probably going to have to do a black Bond because people have been demanding it so much. Or maybe they'll do a trans Bond or some shit. Who knows?
Dude, stop talking.
I hope they don't.
The only thing you could do would be like a female Bond or, you know, or a black guy Bond. But if it's a female Bond, then all the feminists and social justice warriors are going to be like, okay, well, she can't sleep with a lot of guys. And then if she does, it's like, oh, that's not very, you know, woman life. Like, it's like Bond is there to like bang chicks and then also kill the bad guy. That's all it's ever been. And it's like, if you have a woman in there, it's like, so she's going to bang the guy, right?
Or they could do
that's how it has to work.
A lesbian Bond.
Dude, man.
I'm just joking, but you never know what they'll do. I mean, they always have to change, like, and it seems like every movie that comes out now, they'll change some character's race or gender or something, or make them gay just to, because they want to be more inclusive or whatever. You know, because if they don't do that for at least one character in each movie, they're going to get called bigoted. and if they do the opposite and keep Bond as a white male, people are going to be, you know, really, there's going to be a bunch of people saying, oh, you're going to be discriminating against black actors by not allowing them to be Bond. And if they do include a black actor as Bond, then there'll be the people like the people who are pissed off at Star Wars, and they'll be like, hey, you're taking away the opportunities from white actors. And no matter what they'll do, there'll be people pissed off at them.
Nobody wins ever in these arguments. No one. Just if it was a white guy that started out, just let it be a white guy until they never make any more Bond movies. Better to complain about one thing than to make 20 other issues by correcting that one thing. Because that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. They could always make spy movies with black spies, you know, like it's...
They've done that already! They've got, like, what was it? Undercover Brother! Yeah. They've got Shaft! They've got Black Exploitation! And those are some pretty funny movies! And some great movies, too, might I add?
Yeah, there are three Shaft movies, and
there's XXX2 with Ice Cube. They've got opportunities there. It's there. It happened. There are black spies in movies, and they're not bad.
Do you know about the Austin Powers 4? If that's really a thing, I've been hearing about that for years and years.
I don't know. I kind of don't want him to make any more movies. I never saw the third. I never saw Goldmember.
Oh, really?
I've seen bits of it, but that's it. I've seen the first two, and that was like 15 years ago.
Wow.
All right, man. What's our time on this?
An hour, 10 minutes. That's probably enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, we talked about the new Bond movie or whatever we can remember about it. I will say this, like, there was more comedy in this one because, like, he took the car that was supposed to be assigned to another agent, and then he winds up, like, wrecking in the river.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Craig's just like, well, it happens.
He couldn't, like, get it to work because it had all these buttons, and they didn't mean what he thought they meant. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, like, there was actually more comedy in this. It wasn't that serious, which actually made it, like, kind of, it made it enjoyable. Like, I'm not saying that it made it bad. Or, like, if it didn't have comedy, it wouldn't have been a bad movie. But it was like, you know, they had a comedy in this. It's actually pretty good. They upped the comedy more in this, I can tell.
Some of the best Bond movies are comedies. Like, the ones from the 70s are pretty entertaining. Like
Or just Diamonds Are Forever, because that's not a serious movie at all.
Yeah, I love Diamonds Are Forever.
I think I'm part of a forum with a bunch of, like, it's called Old School Otaku, and There was a thread that spread off from us talking about James Bond, and it was consisted of, like, me, Dave Merrill, who does Anime Hell at Anime North and also Anime Week in Atlanta, and he does some other stuff too online. He was going through his list of, like, all these Bond movies, and it got the Diamonds Forever. He's just like, just don't even bother watching it. It was that bad. And I think with it was that and, like, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, he was, like, gave it the most, like, least negative remarks. No, it was that in Octopussy. I have Octopussy on Laserdisc. I just haven't seen it yet. And I've had it for, like, 2 or 3 years.
You have to see that one, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've probably seen 5 minutes of it once. And I just need to sit down. I'll probably watch it tonight or something. I say it like, oh, I thought I'm going to watch it tonight, and then I never do.
Well, have you seen the one where he's in space?
Yeah, I got Moonraker. I think I have, like, 2 copies of Moonraker.
And what about the ones with the redneck sheriff? Those are pretty hilarious.
That is, yeah, the man. No, it was Man with a Golden Gun, and then also, oh, fuck.
Is it Live and Let Die?
The what?
Isn't it Live and Let Die, the other one? Or is that the song that's in it?
Yeah, no, it is Live and Let Die, and I think I have that one, too, because I've got the Roger Moore DVD collection or one of those. I've actually got more Bond movies than I know of, probably.
Live and Let Die, that's an example of how the Bond movies allow plenty of black employment. Half of that is set in Jamaica.
Yeah, you can't say black people are never in a Bond movie. Go watch Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
Like, they're in New Orleans. Like, it can't get any blacker than that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pushing it. But, yeah, that one is when he's like the Louisiana State Trooper guy and Roscoe P. Coltrane or whatever, but he's in there, and that's when they're trying to stop Bond from, like, boat racing on the bayou. And then he meets him again in Man with the Golden Gun, and
he's like on vacation in like Hong Kong or something, or Singapore.
It's like in Thailand or something, yeah.
Thailand, yeah, maybe.
Because he's with his wife, and she's got like this big elephant, and he's just like, honey, no one gives a damn about that. There's something stupid.
Those movies are ridiculous, but at least they're entertaining.
Yeah, there's a weird, like, people who actually like, I'm not a huge fan of the Roger Moore films, but there's just people that absolutely love those movies, and I'm kind of like, I mean, they're cheesy, and they're fun, but I don't think they're that good.
They're not intentionally good, I guess, but they
are
good.
No, they're not intentionally good, but they're fun movies. It was like, there's a period of, like, Bond was cool and kind of serious, and then, like, when Roger Moore came in, like, it was just like, all right, we're just not going to care for 15 years. And then like, Timothy Dalton came in there. I like it. I love the Timothy Dalton movies.
Oh, yeah,
probably License to Kill more than Living Daylights. Or maybe it's vice versa. I don't know.
What's the one where he's hanging out with, like, the Taliban?
That's Living Daylights. And they were the Mujahideen at the time? Yeah.
Right.
Because we were funding them to fight the Soviets in the Afghan war in the 80s. So when I say we, the Americans, because you and me are both American citizens.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know how many people from the international community are like, what do you mean we? I'm in Turkey or something. We had no part in that. And I'm like, my bad. To emphasize.
Yeah, I don't know how many Turkish anime fans watch our videos.
We get a lot of we get a number of traffic from other, like, Middle Eastern and European countries that click on our podcast links.
I remember
some
Mason
out there to listen to us.
Mason told us some statistics about, like, you know, back in the day, how many people would listen to the Cool Kids Club podcast, and there would be some from, like, surprising countries, like Iran. There were some listeners in Iran, and like all around the Middle East, and it was kind of surprising, but. Most of our listeners are Americans.
Maybe their, like, assignment is just, like, to study American culture for them to hate every part of us or to learn English.
Yeah.
If it's the latter, we're not good examples.
Or maybe it's the CIA there is listening to us. They just love anime.
Yeah. Our side business is a pro-ISIS setup. We're really, if you play our podcast backwards, we're really just like subliminal messages for the story of America.
Secret terrorist podcast.
It's not anime of yesteryear, it's a la of yesterday.
I guess. A la forever.
Oh man, we gotta. No, we better not come up with an acronym. I don't want to go down that road.
Yeah.
Because, like, what if us, like, what if someone from, like, ISIS was listening and I'm like, you're not part of our network, commit jihad on us. I'm like, yeah. No!
We don't want a fatwa being put on us to declare us the enemies of the Islamic world or something.
Yeah, come on, we're just two, one's a college grad, one's trying to get out of college, American citizens that don't want part in either side of that. Please have pity. If you are listening to this and you can understand what we're saying...
Maybe we need to do an Arabic translation of our podcast.
Man, who's going to spend the time to translate our podcast in Arabic? I mean, God willing, if someone's that dedicated, but if you are, please let us know, because God help you.
I remember there are...
Allah help you.
There are, like, super robot, like, comics and videos that I sometimes see. When I'm searching for, like, Shogun Warrior stuff on eBay that are in Arabic, so I guess there are people who are into, like, old mecha anime that live in the Islamic world, weirdly enough. But I doubt they listen to our podcast, or not many of them.
I don't know. I figured if we had dedicated listeners, we'd be getting a lot of comments. And our comment feed has been drying up for a while. Which is sad, because there was a point where we got a lot of comments, and then I think people have probably moved on, or... We didn't talk about anime enough. I don't know.
We
still got some serious people that still listen to us.
There's still Cody and Corey, I think, listen.
Yeah, I let them know. But it seems like they, like, forget that we exist. And then, like, on Facebook, they're like, oh, man, I'm, like, 9 episodes behind. I better catch up. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, well, sometimes I see them say, oh, I can't wait to listen to this when I get home or something. It's nice to see, at least.
Yeah. Our small group of dedicated people.
Yeah. So, I guess we should do closing remarks. I've got a Christian thing lined up here.
All right, I got some beef with the Anime World Order podcast. Not really beef, but I got stuff to say.
Okay,
go ahead on Christian first.
I'll read this first, yeah. Okay, I have a short announcement I need to get off my breasts about the PS4 for Quickville Shopping store credit on the voucher, all right? I wish I could offer something unique for a PS4, but the facts are, aside from new book pages, I am not psychic or a mind reader. I offered the voucher because then, depending on what the person wants to choose from, the store that is unique as he/she can get the specific figures they want, and or books, and or medallions, commissions, whatever. I feel just flabbergasted and disappointed in that those of you who do not understand and appreciate fully the opportunity to have such a unique, shopping experience that I can offer for a give or take about $100 plus or minus dollars experience. OMG! Exclamation point. So this guy, he still hasn't gotten his PS4 in the mail that he wanted for his birthday. And he thought people were going to send him one in exchange for a coupon for some free amiibo junk that he is going to make. And nobody has jumped on it. And he's like getting really upset about it.
Even though we know he could just set aside some money. He could have set aside that money 5 times over between when he announced it and now to get a PS4. From government tugboat money.
Yeah. He does not save money very well. I guess he just spends it all immediately on downloadable content as soon as he gets the newest check on the first of the month.
Yeah, didn't Josh say something about how he got like $5,000 from some guy, and he's already saying he's low on money? It's like $5,000. What happened to it?
Oh yeah, there was a guy who paid him like a whole bunch of money in exchange for Chris was supposed to draw more comic book pages, but that never materialized past him finishing the Christmas special.
Jeez.
People are saying, oh, you won't honor your end of the bargain if we send you a PS4 because you didn't complete all the comic book pages. But I doubt that those people who say that were actually going to give him a PS4 anyway, because who would waste that much money on Chris Chan?
Yeah, I mean, there's a thing called, like, selling stuff and getting money for the PS4 if you wanted that badly. Like,
he acts like it's some sort of like real travesty that he doesn't have a PS4 because he keeps saying,
because he wants to
so
keep
behind
up with current technology. Like, dude, you're like, people live out in the freaking jungle and they've never seen like a phone before. They're doing perfectly fine without technology. So can you.
Yeah. I mean, he lives a lifestyle that I'm sure a lot of people would kill for in the Congo or whatever.
Yeah. I mean,
he also put out some video of, talking about this Jeff/Francine Ozos guy again.
Yeah.
Where he showed some sort of like meme merchandise that the guy was selling.
Yeah, on his Vita, and I couldn't tell what the heck it was. It's just him going, ugh, ugh, ugh.
Yeah. I could see some of it, and it was all like,
it was women's clothing from what I saw.
One of them was like
a tube top and a thong or something.
Yeah, there was some underwear that said "Dirty Crap
yeah.
Briefs" on it. It was supposed to be like Chris Chan merchandise or something. and yeah, there was all sorts of horrible stuff. And I don't know why he thought it would be a good idea to highlight it by making a video out of it, because now probably more people are going to buy it than would have before. Like, no one would have known about
more
this.
More people are
going to
throw money at that than Chris Chan stuff. So he's actually helping promote this guy.
Yeah.
than trying to like get the down on him.
Yeah, he doesn't understand reverse psychology.
No, he doesn't.
Okay, so I guess that's all for Chris Chan. What did you have to say about Initial D?
Okay, so as of February 29th, something happened that Anime World Order put out a podcast about their review of Initial D Fourth Stage. And they basically spent the rest of the time in general talking about how much they hate Initial D. This is all information I've known for years now because, like, about 6 years ago, I think they had like a decade in review, and I left a comment on there about like, hey, you guys forgot Initial D. And then I remember Daryl Surratt and Gerald on the comment section, like, we'll never review it ever because we hate this show so much and yada, yada, yada. They made their point. And I was like, okay, so what made them review Initial D was the fact that some guy on Twitch for undisclosed amount that Daryl Surratt has not released to any, to told the public at least on whatever this guy paid for them to review the fourth stage of Initial D. And so it took them a couple months to do it. So then their review is about what I expected, them just crapping on the show. And they gave good points as to why they don't like it, which is points I've already known about.
What, like the CGI being bad?
That's always the easiest one. Yeah, there was that. That was like the first thing they went for, which is like, okay, fine. Everyone, apparently I already knew about that. And but, you know, like, it was interesting because, like, you know, their good parts of it was them really talking about how and why Initial D got so popular the way it did, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago in the States and also in Japan because of what was in it and also what kind of what consisted of what was going along with it. Because, like, Initial D came out at a time when Dance Dance Revolution came out. So the music in Dance Dance Revolution is consisted of like J-pop and Eurobeat songs and some other American stuff. But Initial D was also airing Eurobeat music when it was coming out in Japan in the late 80s or 1998. There was a lot of like aspects to why Initial D got really popular and caught on both in Japan and a little bit in America. And my thing is I guess I'm going to try to answer this question the best I can on this podcast. What I really want to do is do my own review of Initial D, and I've got a friend of mine I want to ask on because the buddy I want to ask on is the guy who does Mighty Rabbit Studios, his own game company that did Saturday Morning RPG and Breach and Clear. And I've known – his name's Josh, and I've known Josh for over 10 years now. And we met working at Toys R Us that Christmas of 2005 when we brought up – I think I was like, the conversation was like, we're working behind the R-Zone counter and we started talking about video games and arcades and I think I said that I played Initial D and he goes, really? You play Initial D? Like he lit up. And I was like, you do too? And that's how we became friends. And we've been friends since then because we both like Initial D. Our friendship isn't really based on like, that's like the start or the spark was us liking and knowing Initial D. It's not like our friendship is always based on us talking about Initial D all the time. That's part of it, but like it's just us becoming friends in general. But it was that initial spark there. And
is that supposed to be a pun there, the initial spark?
Sure, why not? I didn't really think about it. I just said it. But I'm glad you caught on. But no, like our part of our conversations, like as friends, was always making fun of the Eurobeat music and how, like, you know, like. You know, it's not an Initial D Eurobeat song if you don't have these five elements or these lyrics about fire, space, the sun, love, and some other stuff. And it's like that's partially true there. Or money. Money's another one. Yeah, it's just like kind of our – that's sort of our like sort of our bonding premise there. And we would go to like – we heard about a new like version 4 that came out. Like someone arcade in Fayetteville, North Carolina. When I was still up in North Carolina before I moved to South Carolina – like, they had Initial D4, and so we took, like, the hour and a half drive from Raleigh to Fayetteville to play Initial D4. Like, we made a day of it. And, cause, to play the arcade game, and of course, I'm doing much better than he is, and he's still stuck on one of the guys, and he's, like, punching the screen and flipping the guy off and getting so mad, and I'm just, like, closing my eyes, breezing by, like, oh, you having trouble? That's how we played. But going back to the question that Anime World Order was asking is because they hate this show immensely so much because they were never impressed by it to begin with. And their question was like, whenever they ran into fans, which I didn't think there was any fans for this to begin with, because I never really like met a lot of them. I knew a couple of them in high school, but that was it. And their thing was that it seems like the only people they ever met that liked this show were the ones that say that they don't like how it looks, but they still say it's awesome. And so the crew seems to have this mindset of like, those are the only people that's the only reason they've ever gotten was the people that like, no, this show looks terrible and never get anything out of it. Like, oh, it's all a bunch of car talk, but like, it doesn't make anybody interested in cars. The people who watch it never had an interest in vehicles and cars and racing. And like, it serves no substance. It doesn't get anybody interested in anything. And that's like all they've ever heard is from what they kind of said verbatim. And for me, that's the opposite because I got into cars and racing and Eurobeat music and stuff because I watched Initial D. And it was kind of by fate, sort of, I guess, that I bought this set of Victory Gundam episodes. It was those Chinese subs I told you about earlier.
Uh-huh.
The last disc had the first four episodes of Initial D in English subtitles. And these came from a Chinese guy that I knew. And so I never knew they were on there till like a year later. So then I popped them open and like cause I kind of knew of Initial D by then, but I didn't really know what it was about. And the only thing I had sort of a hand on was I played one of the arcades of it in some mall in Massachusetts when I went up there to see a friend one summer. And I played a little bit of it. I got a card out of it. They had like the games run on a magnetic card system. So they always had your saved game data, which was great. And I've still got all of those. And I saw the episodes of Initial D, and I loved it. I saw all of them, the first four, and I was like, I want more of this show. This is amazing. And for a second, I never criticized any part of it. I never even knew there was anything wrong with the show. Like, I didn't look at the CGI cars and think, oh, God, this is terrible. I was just like, okay, so it doesn't look – maybe I thought like, oh, maybe this doesn't look that good. But like I didn't care. It was just so cool looking. And I never even knew that people like – there was like a group of people that hated this show. And because as soon as I saw those four episodes, like that's when Tokyopop was putting out the DVD sets for them. So like I was buying whatever I needed to see next. So I saved up like, you know, money to get it once every other month or so. And that was $30 a pop for three or four episodes on a disc, and I still have all those. And yeah, they even criticized like the Tokyopop version, which they have every right to, and I completely agree on that because Tokyopop put out this tricked out version and the Japanese version. So what I did originally was that I would watch it and hear the English dub, which you know I've heard so many dubs, so like it had some notable actors in it too, and I'll get to that, but. So, like, I watched the English dub part of it, and then when it got to the racing part, they did edits to the video to make it look like the Fast and Furious movie, which looked god-awful. So then that's how they did it visually for those aesthetics to try to match up with it, because Fast and Furious was, like, a really big thing at the time, because those movies were coming out, and that's kind of when this import scene was really big at the time, and I was part of all of that. But then, like, as soon as that would happen, I'd switch over the Japanese track to hear it, to hear the Eurobeat soundtrack. So then eventually I just wound up watching the series in Japanese entirely because I was like, I'm not even going to bother with the English dub. Because I just kind of wanted to hear how it would sound. But the English cast consisted of Steve Bloom, Vic Minogna. Vic was ahead of minor role as one of the characters, one of the racers in there. Steve Bloom was the voice of Ryusuke Takahashi, who is not the same Ryusuke Takahashi as the guy who directed Votoms. And there's some other notable voice actors that did dubbing for it, but same voices are not in the Funimation ones. Those are the Funimation cast that does it. I guess to answer the question why, I think it's really like I like the story of it. And it was just something about not only the series, but really kind of what everything that like got interested because of Initial D, kind of what led to everything else. Like I met my best friend through it, and I'm not saying like Initial D is my savior, but it was like because I liked it. Like I don't know if I would have been friends with Josh to this day. I mean, it was that. It was just the fact that it was like I was so fascinated by it. It involves a bunch of teenagers that like dealt with the same stuff that I did, and you know, like granted, the characters were kind of the personalities usually stayed the same, but they dealt with like the stuff I felt. Like one of them, you know, one of them was trying to get with a girl and it didn't work out. And like when he went to go see this girl, and because he was about to dump her, thinking it wasn't going to work out, and then his boss convinces him to go see her. And by the time he gets there, she waited for him, and like in the other side of the video, and so that she leaves by the time he gets there, and he's crushed. And I was like, that like hit me hard. Like that may be like not even like that dramatic, but like I've never seen a like I haven't seen at that point any anime that did that to me. And so like I was like able to relate with these characters because like, oh, I can't get a girlfriend. I'm like them. I can't get a girlfriend either. And I haven't seen anything to compare it to making anything better. So it was that. I mean, I got into vehicles and like this interest of knowing like all the technical aspects and the talk that they would say in the show, even if it wasn't like planned out well enough when you look back on it. But like I enjoyed all that stuff. So there's really more of a nostalgia view to it now. But for years, like I've never had it questioned to why I should like Initial D. I never even knew that I had somebody would question me on that. And so it's kind of like a really, like maybe like a blessing that Anime World Order did this Initial D review, because now like I'm following the comment section. So you've got this one group of people that are like defending it, which of course I'm part of. And then the others that are like, oh, this show is utter crap. I don't know why people like it. So there's these two sides. And I didn't even know there was never a negative side, because I didn't know there was one there, because I felt like I was alone liking this show.
There are other commenters on the post that like it too, right? That are saying they disagree with Anime World Order.
Yeah, there was, even in the podcast, Anime World or Daryl was like, oh, you know, we're going to get some flack, you know, like obviously, because he knew this was coming. And I'm like, you know, I'm not upset. Like, I'm really not upset with them or mad at them or anything like that. I'm just kind of really trying to answer the question as to why I like the show, since it's such a big deal for them to try to understand why people like the show they find so much fault in. But apparently it's so wrong to like something that's got fault in it. Freaking look at anime in general. There's still people that are Dragon Ball Z fans that watch Super, even they're going to crap all over it because they're Dragon Ball Z fans. And they're still going to watch the freaking thing. But they're not criticizing that. They gotta criticize the Animation D fandom for liking a show that, you know, because they like it. And that's kind of the answer I've always had, was like, because I've never been questioned to like it this way as to why I like the show. I didn't know I had to come up with my own answer. And so now it's just always, because his response is always like, the fans that he apparently got a hold of was like, they always gave me this answer of like, just because, like, you know, we like it just because. And that's kind of always been my thing. It's like, yeah, I just happen to like it. Like, I've never really had a detail as to why. And so now it's kind of like really made me, like, as curiosity, really think about, like, well, you know, why do I like Initial D? And I've got my answers, which I kind of stated. Like, it's I guess the allure of it was just how it looked at the time. And I didn't think it looked that bad. And it was all these elements that were part of it, like in terms of like how the characters are. And granted, in a show, you want a character to evolve, but they kind of usually did stay this, you know, stay the same sort of. They got the same personality quirks, but it's a show about racing, so it's more about their skill improving than really their personality. And so, I mean, in some way, actually, some of the characters did have to grow. There's the main character does lose a race in the second season, which Daryl Surratt thought he never lost a race, which we actually confirmed that in the comment section, because if you freaking researched the show, you would have known that. But anyways. But like I kind of wrote in there that the back of this other guy's case, like, you know, the main character is Takumi, and he does lose a race. And Daryl's like, what are you talking about? He only loses to his dad from what I saw on 4th stage. And I'm like, I actually lost to this other guy. And that was a lesson for Takumi to learn, because he thought he could use his car and the same engine in it when it needed to be upgraded. And people have told him this, and he would neglect it that. So his character trait was that I should have listened, which part of listening when you make a mistake is growing up. So there's like a positive trait, and he becomes more interested in cars. So he does improve as a character being interested in the stuff. So it makes him a better driver, along with the skill that he has already to already refine it. Oh, and I got to let my brain cool down. But yeah, so it's not like, I don't see why Initial D is entirely like this bad show that they make it out to be. It's either you like it or you don't. And even if you weren't a car buff, you might become one from watching it. It happened to me. I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. It was, and plus, it hits me at your teenage years. So at your teenage years, you're always like really upset, more obsessed with stuff than anything else. And that kind of builds your character in life, which is why we do an anime podcast to talk about this stuff.
So he really hates Initial D, huh? What is it that he hates so much? Just he thinks the main characters are too good at racing cars?
It was like one-dimensional, that Takumi doesn't really lose, and that like the part of the character was the fact that he uses this trick as like gutter cornering, which he's able to get like they explain it like in the show, like how like physics, like or by physics how it works is because the tire grips inside of a guard or not the guardrail, but like a ditch of the corner of and going downhill, and that's able to like corner the car better around a corner so you can avoid that crap. It's basically like if you go into a corner too fast, there's understeering and oversteering. So it's stopping from the car from understeering, which is basically letting the car go to the outside where oversteering your car kind of spins around if you hit a corner the wrong way. So there's a force and a science behind that, which they explain, which when I looked into it at the time through internet logic or whatever, and when I thought about it, I was like, actually, that would kind of make sense, because your car, you're not being pulled out by gravity when you're taking that turn. I mean, because they kind of explain the stuff in the show. It may not be, it's not visually explained, but they tell it to you. So then I had to research it, which I was like, okay, this actually kind of backs it up. And so that got me like just really interested in vehicles and stuff and cars and racing and all that. And I don't see how that's a problem. And
I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of anime with different subject matters. I mean, they should probably get that there are people who are going to be more into a show about cars just because it's sort of a unique thing for an anime to be about. It's as much about fighting.
And these are coming from a group that doesn't know anything about cars or doesn't like them. They know they get into it, and it gets them from point A to point B. Now, personally, I think if you know, some people out there should know something about their car if something happens to it. I don't know everything about my car, but when there's a problem with it, eventually I can narrow down what causes the problem. I mean, the mechanic's going to know, but at least for my assurance, I know what's wrong with it. And if there's anything I can do to repair it, I will, because that saves me $500 or $600 in freaking mechanics, labor costs, and all that stuff that I don't have to fork out when I can just get the part and fix it on my own. Mm-hmm. Or I know friends that are mechanics, and they tell me stuff, and I just happen to pick up on it. Like, I'm not so freaking close-minded that I block anything out that it's not interested in me. I try to pick up on anything that might be remotely interested or might bail me out of trouble eventually. I'm not that close-minded of a freaking nerd, and that is me ranting, and not just Anime World Order, but other people out there that are like, I don't know anything about cars, so I'm just going to shut my mind off of that, which is utter bullcrap. And that pisses me off. So now you're getting my Daryl Surratt rant. It doesn't kill you to learn something new.
Maybe that woman who forgot to fuel up her car should have watched an Initial D. Then she would have known that gas is needed.
Oh, man. Again, I have to, like, that's – okay. So part of my little bit of anger fit came out. And I'm glad. This is on my podcast, my show, so if they happen to listen to this, they're welcome to comment and tell me how wrong I am. Go ahead, but I will listen to you, and I will respond.
Our first podcast feud, we can do an episode back and forth attacking each other on Initial D.
I'm not going to do that. It's it's not worth it. It's a freaking cartoon. Come on.
Yeah.
But, you know, they what's interesting is the fact that Anime World Order was like, this show has no merit, you know, we all hate it, it doesn't mean anything, why do people like it? But here, you know, they make such a big deal about it, and their comment section is filled up with two different sides. And you got me, that's like, for fun, getting into why I like the show, which this is just like, why can't I just like a show without being questioned about it? Like, I don't care, like, because Daryl Surratt's a big wrestling fan, so it's like, I'm not there, I don't know a lot about wrestling, it doesn't mean I go out there and hate it. Or find things to hate about it. Because even Initial D, like, even if you don't understand cars, there's still something technical and something you can learn from it if you freaking open up your mind and, you know, take the nuggets of truth that are in there that make it interesting. And it's a technical show. Like, the thing is, they have their standard of what shows they like and how they can understand it, and I have mine, and they're separate. And there's nothing wrong with that. anyways, that's just like my sort of my feedback to that episode. I'm not saying everything they're saying is wrong, because I did agree, like, there was a number of things I did agree with. But to try to answer the question as to why people like this show, because they can't understand, is the fact that it means a lot to me in my own way. And even if I go back to it and I might look at it differently, it still means something to me. And I'm still going to love it and enjoy it because of, like, how connected I got to it and how that brought me to knowing other people and the hobbies that I got from it and everything else that I kind of explained.
Yeah, a lot of people have this mindset with anime, like, if you don't like the same exact series that I like, well, how can that possibly be? Like, they're just, like, so stuck in their own world that they can't understand why other people that have different opinions based on their own experiences of, like, what they grew up watching or what their personal tastes are, or there's just a lot of different types of anime that different people are going to like, and it shouldn't really be that surprising to them that they're fans of Initial D.
Yeah, it's really just, like, overanalyzing something that I didn't even think it had to be bothered to be overanalyzed. But I don't know what answer they're trying to look for from people that like the show. And I like the show, and I've already stated all the things that came, like, how that affected me in some way. Mm-hmm. I got a friend out of it, you know, I got a best friend out of it. I got involved in the arcade scene. That was a big thing in, you know, a decade ago, which doesn't happen anymore because the arcade scene's dead practically in America. It was already dying a decade ago. And, you know, if there's Initial D there, I'm going to play it because that's just what I love. That's just what I do. It's like people that go to the arcades and play fighting games because, like, if it's there, that's what they love. And they're going to play their fighting game, their Street Fighter 2, their Capcom versus SNK, their Soul Calibur 3 or 5 or whatever. If it's there, they're going to play it. And, like, the same thing with Initial D. And I freaking love those games. But the anime isn't everything that I love about Initial D. It's one part of it. It's the arcade scene that I got into. It's me liking the games and you know, how I got interested in cars and racing after it. And it's just kind of opened this other world up to it. Even if it didn't do it intentionally or was promoted to try to open that for me, it still got me interested in it. And that's probably the other aspect of the show, is that it was created for this aspect of the import or the racing scene in Japan at the time, because the guy who wrote it loves cars and knows stuff about it. And the guy who's considered the Drift King, Kichi Tetsuchiya, was a technical advisor on the show, so he made sure that anything technical in there is coming from a guy who was a Japanese racing pro in the 80s, and has won trophies, and won, it's been in a few Grand Prix. So he obviously knows something about what he's been spending part of his life on for 40 years or 30, 40 years at this point. Man, F it, man. That's all I can say. But I just had to get that off my chest and put it on this recording. So this is like my corner of the internet that I can say this. And, you know, I'm not going to stop listening to Anime World Order. I don't hate them at all. We just have different opinions on a show that they said their stuff. I'm saying mine. And for my blog post for school, I'm going to try to go into to kind of go in detail as to why I like the show, because I kind of want to find out for myself. And I think that's a good thing. So it's really like, as much as I'm trash talking them, I'm not trying to trash talk them. It's just really how they went about it. I want to dive into why I like it. So, like, I'm going to go through my first couple episodes and see, like, how it looks to me 10 years later. And, like, yeah, because it's obviously going to – I know it's going to look different, but I'm probably going to still love the heck out of it and still have that same feeling for it. It's going to be probably majority nostalgia, and that may not change, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, you don't watch an anime with, like, perfect objectivity. Of course, you're going to have, like, some nostalgia for it if it's something you've seen before, and that's a good thing because it makes you appreciate it more because it brings back memories and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I mean, we are doing the Anime of Yesteryear podcast, after all.
Yeah, I mean,
nothing wrong with yesteryear's anime.
Yeah, the purpose, I mean, like, our intended goal, quote-unquote, you wouldn't believe it from us talking from the Bond movie, but, I mean, our mostly general intended purpose of this podcast is to go back and look at older anime titles, because whether or not they've maybe hold up, but we still have an enjoyment for that. And then people can sit there and criticize us like, well, why do you like doing it? Because we do. Like, because I want to. I have an interest in it. That's where my heart's at. Like, is that a problem? Is that going to affect you in any way?
Yeah, like a lot of the time Viku is like, what? How is the podcast still going on? Why would you still do that? That's crazy. But,
because
you know,
we want to.
Yeah, it's just like it's something fun to do, watch an old anime and review it, and hopefully some other people see the review and look into it and watch it as well, you know, instead of just whatever new Moe trash is out that everyone else is watching, you know, they can experience something new to them that's old.
Yeah, I mean, isn't the typical anime fan like goes like what, maybe three years, maybe at most five in some rare cases? But they're anime fans from like two to three years. And like, that's like always like this convention cycle where it's like you go to a con and it's a lot of new people, but within 2 years, there's another group of new people that come in there. Cause the ones from 2 years ago, a majority of them are out of the anime cycle onto something else because that's just how teenagers are. And like you and me have stuck with it and are now kind of finding a way to contribute to the anime community that still exists in America and obviously still exists in Japan if we can contribute to that in some way. I mean, we freaking got stuff from Right Stuff. Like, we're obviously – there's some sort of level of us mattering
mm-hmm.
to, for a company to send us stuff to talk about their products. And, you know, and everything – like, to me, like, everything means something on some level. And so with me – loving Initial D the way I do, it means something. It's, you know, it doesn't mean nothing. And, you know, in the case for Anime World Order, they still do the stuff they do because it means something. They may not say it that way, but it's clear and present. So, like, I thank them for that. And I thank them for doing this Initial D review so then I can go and freaking pound them back. But I'm...
yeah, no, I guess on the bright side, like, at least they got you to examine why you liked it and... You did get to think about Initial D some and talk about it on here because of what they said, even if you don't agree with it.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, like, there's, you know, they have their one side of it, so then I've got my one side, and I'll try to explain it in a blog, but, I mean, that's, I mean, everything I explained is kind of like how I put it into perspective. I mean, I also love that, I mean, there was a point, because Eurobeat music was part of the show, which is what also another part of it that really drew me into it, because I never heard anything like that at that time. I mean, I think there was a point where maybe for 2 years, every day I heard Eurobeat music. That's all I wanted to listen to.
You got really into it, huh?
The what?
You got really into it, huh? Because of Initial D.
Yeah, it was... I can't really remember a day that didn't go by that I didn't hear Eurobeat music on some form or fashion. Maybe a couple days I took off, but then like I always had it there, and time to time I still listen to it. Like Anime World Order's only positive thing to it was like, well, we really like it for the music, and I'm like, fine, I don't care. but. I guess it's just like I'm defending a series that I never thought I had I didn't know that had to be defended, or I didn't think anybody would, it needed a reason to be defended. I thought it was just like, if you like it, you like it, you don't, and you got your reasons. But if I felt drawn in to answer the question as to why I love it, and there's a lot of, you know, factors there, and I think hopefully I explained that very well. And if I didn't, well, I don't know the answer that you want. I'm sorry. Whatever, move on. All right, since I started this end of the call, let me go in an hour and 8 minutes. So I have no idea what the timer is on that on your recording side.
An hour 52, and I think we started closing remarks at an hour 10.
Okay.
So this is more like the Initial D podcast.
Yeah, this is the initial counter AWO Initial D rant podcast.
So thanks for listening to the Initial D Space Adventure Club Mobile Suit Gundam Zeta Gundam Spectre Chris Chan podcast.
Well, every episode is always some Chris Chan podcast in some form or aspect.
Yeah, there's a topic for everyone in here.
Yeah. What we really need to do, and I keep saying this every other episode, is we need to do our origin podcast, and I wanted to do that 3 months ago, and that did not happen. I still want to do it, and supposedly another thing – big thing coming up is like
the death of AIM.
Yeah, the Death of AIM, which I guess you guys are going to do a recording on it, which will just it's just going to be like the Toon Zone chat drama from like 10 years ago.
Yeah, so what happened here is that I got a message from AIM the other day saying that they're discontinuing the old version of AIM. And the new versions, of course, don't have group chat. And so the last day that it'll function is the 15th is when it's being shut down. So I guess we'll do it on the 14th just in case it shuts down on the 15th at like midnight or something.
The thing is, like, I'm going to be in D.C. since it's my spring break. It's that Monday night. I don't know if I can – I mean, I'll try. I'll bring my iPad with me, and I'll Skype with you guys if I have, like, a way to do so.
Yeah. But, well, the thing is, I'm not sure how we can even contact a lot of the people that – I mean, we are kind of just speculating in the chat that we're going to get all these people on. I don't think any of them actually been contacted yet.
Yeah. Do you really want to bring back Joe Vita?
Yeah, I don't think so.
What's he up to these days?
but yeah, I think we could probably just do a like sometime around then, you know, before you go to DC or after, we could do like a podcast retrospective of the AIM chats in general, just with some of the people we still hang out with in the Slack chat. And because I don't think this big final AIM chat is really going to happen beyond the people that we still talk to.
Yeah, I mean, I leave for DC, I think, on the 12th. So if you want to do, like, a retrospective of, like, our – which is really our backstory anyways.
Right.
Like the night before or sometime next week, then I'm definitely down for that. But at least before I leave.
I'm sure we've mentioned before that the podcast was originally started just as a joke to see if Mason would air anything. And that's all there really is to the podcast. But with the AIM chats, there's a lot more history to go into there. And
yeah, we've got our, like, I've kind of tickled the idea in my brain about, like, would I ever want to write a book about, like, off the AIM chat logs and, like, go into, like, this saga about it, about, like, our internet side of the internet drama. I mean, like, it's everywhere. It's always going to be there because it's the human element behind it. But, like, I don't know if ours is any unique or better or worse than any other, like, forum out there. But, I mean, like, I think it's pretty unique for us.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of personal stuff in there, or we could probably get sued for libel if we talked about some of it or something. Especially if Trump gets rid of the First Amendment like he's going to.
Yeah, I mean, it's the stuff of, like, how Arcua was going out with Curry, and she was underage, and they did some stuff.
Yeah, there's various illegal activities in there that probably should not be brought to light.
Supposedly, I might have killed someone. That never existed.
German boy man.
Oh no! And then Viku apparently killed himself, and then he tried to get Gadumat like jailed, and he was like pretending to be dead for a month. He wound up being the better bullying bureau like representative or something on the AIM chat asking questions, and it was all in a case to troll me.
Yeah, we made like a fake obituary for him, and there was like a fake article about Gadumat getting arrested, and it was like a black and white picture of him behind bars with a top hat on.
And then a month later, Viku's like, surprise, it was me all along. And I'm like, God, you a-hole. Screw you. Screw off. I hate all you guys. 7 years later, we're still talking to each other. I think it's just amazing that, like, we've done a bunch of crap to each other on this on the chats. And we've said some things, and, like, we're still friends.
Yeah. Well, of course, there are the people who will not be coming back to the chat for the anniversary or the final chat or whatever. Like, there's no way we could get J-Kun on, for instance. But,
I mean, Tony's, yes. Ishtar, yes. Forget Curry.
Yeah. I think Yash on. I still talk to Yash. And there's probably a few other people, but hardly anyone uses AIM anymore, so it would be hard to get people to download the old version.
Do you want
to
get NIV on?
Oh, God.
Mister, I gotta record all the Disney shows with, like, pre-pubescent girls on it and archive it on 4chan and get banned, like, 500 times.
Yeah, I don't know
about that. That's also the dark side you should not know about.
Yeah. Well, that guy, just for anyone who doesn't know about him, he used to be in the chats all the time, and he would, he had this chat that he made called Death Rabbit Chat that was, I think the title was a reference to an episode of Frisky Dingo that had aired.
Yeah, it's the latter part of the first season when they, like, there's a guy running some sort of underground thing, and he ties, like, giant meat cleavers to bunny rabbits. And it's supposed to be like a fight to the death with bunny rabbits with meat cleavers tied to them. So they call it like Death Rabbit. So the episode was called Death Rabbit.
Yeah.
So.
And that chat lasted like a week or so. And all sorts of terrible stuff was said in there that is better left forgotten.
Like, this is going to be a lot for me to go through and, like, okay, you need to make, like, a tally list of, like, okay, you need to censor this name and this name and this name and this name so nobody gets...
The names of the innocent were censored to protect the victims.
They're their own victims.
Yeah, well, and then there's the whole Ishtar and Spamantha thing that happened and, I don't know, 2008 or 9 or whatever. I don't remember when exactly, but that's another thing that is, possible criminal element to there, because she had threatened to put the restraining order on him for harassing her online and threatening to kill himself in her yard and everything, and...
Oh, I forgot about the killing. I mean, I knew he was, like, wanting to get, like, suggested photos from her because he really liked her. Yeah. And I forgot about him wanting to kill himself over that. And now he's fine. Now he was on an episode of as a background character for – oh, crap, that freaking hand puppet dog thing on Adult Swim.
Oh, the Comet and Triumph show.
Yeah, that was it. He was like in a brief second with Michael Winslow in there, since he like does film stuff in New York.
Yeah.
So Ishtar's doing good for himself.
Yeah, that was like, I think that was between high school and college, and then in college he got more of a life and socialized more and became more normal. But yeah, that was a ridiculous incident. Wait, that happened back in the day.
Hey, do you want to get HD Revolution on?
Oh yeah, that was
oh. Let me tell you, the person I want to get back on is that guy I told you about. I think it was PhytoMcCokeFiend.
Yeah.
Who I talked to for a while. That dude was weird. Apparently, like, he was with a girl that basically forced herself on him because she wanted a baby. And then he wanted to call his son Speed Racer, and she wouldn't allow it. And he would tell me the dumbest stuff about, like, how... Like, he converted to Buddhism, and then I never heard from him after that. But, like, we got into a discussion about how, like, what's considered creepy in cosplay. And let's just boil it down. How about all cosplay is creepy, just to have it across the board thing? I know some people wouldn't like me saying that. But he wanted to get those, like, Rei Ayanami plugs for his Shinji Ikari plug suit. And I was like, dude, that's kind of creepy because it's a girl thing. He's like, no, it's not. And I'm like... Why don't you just be like a nerf staff person with, like, build a personality on that? No, dude, that's creepy. What are you talking about? That was our argument.
Yeah, I remember the story.
That's more normal to do.
I remember the story about him making some Japanese woman pregnant. And
yeah, he thinks he potentially got a Japanese girl pregnant at, like, Otakon, because all he did was basically, like, have her in a hotel and, like, basically, like, all they did was bone each other for 3 days. And he's like, that was like some sort of proud crowning achievement that she's going to come home and have a half gaijin baby.
And then there was the HG thing that you mentioned briefly. Well, what happened with him was he had believed, and I think he still does, I don't know, that he was...
That he's Otakin with Rurouni Kenshin?
Yeah, he thinks he's the reincarnation of an anime character. And he has like a list of them, because there's like a bunch that he thinks he's the reincarnation of. And it's just, like, every character he likes in an anime. And he thinks that they're, like, because the character has some resonance with him emotionally, he thinks they must have been him in a previous life. I mean, the whole Otakin, Otherkin stuff is just nutso. But that stuff is, you know, that was the start of the whole my exposure to anyway, the whole social justice warrior thing where you have to respect my viewpoint or you're intolerant, even if my viewpoint is totally insane. That's so prevalent now on the internet. Because this was like late 2000s, maybe 2007, 2008. He made a thread on Toon Zone saying, the answer man from Anime News Network doesn't respect me and the otaku can, because they think that we're not really the reincarnations of anime characters, and that's not respecting our beliefs, and that's bigotry. And then they spiraled into a huge threat on Toon Zone where there were all these people saying like, oh, that's ridiculous. You're not an anime character. And he would be like, oh yeah, well, it's no more ridiculous than whatever you believe. And people would be like, well, actually it kind of is. And he would get all bent out of shape. Because he would be like, well, actually my viewpoints are like of equal value with the Bible and the Hindu texts and the Buddhist texts, and it's so true because I say so. And when we would ask him, like, well, how is this the case when these characters don't exist? and he would be like, oh, well, they do exist in parallel universes, and because of what he calls, and I quote, quantum shit, they can teleport their consciousness into this universe, into his mind, making them his past lives. And it's like, wow, this is supposed to be a serious viewpoint? Okay.
This is supposed to be a serious forum?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think any of that stuff happens on Toon Zone anymore. It's the excitement left, like, when we left.
Yeah, it got boring. But back in the day, there was some funny stuff on there. There were actually two threads of this. The first one got closed because it got too rowdy. And then someone made a second one, and I think it probably got closed, too. But they're both pretty long, and a lot of funny stuff in there. But that kind of stuff doesn't happen there anymore. No one posts there anymore, hardly.
Well, it's like the same people that posted there like 10 years ago.
Yeah, there's a handful of loyalists who still post there, but not very many. Because the forum is like, you know, it's got all these technical problems where all the post counts got doubled.
It looks technically challenged, like just looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah, the design has been bad since, I don't know, like 2008 or something. It's been terrible for a long time.
It's been redesigned by Harley so many times, the lead admin of the site, and I don't know what she thinks she's doing, but I don't see it.
Yeah. There was one time when they made it look like really kiddie. They like changed the width of the forum where it wouldn't adjust to your browser and it was just like a fixed width, and they changed the colors to make it look all childish, and everyone like put a bunch of negative comments saying like, oh, this is terrible, why did you do that? And she'd be like, well, actually I'm really good at my job of web design, and if you don't agree, well, you're just not an expert like me. And then people would be like, well why is it so bad, and when are you gonna fix it?
Why does it suck?
And her excuse would be, well, you know, my grandma is dying. And people would be like, what? What does that have to do with the fact that you made a terrible website design? And she would be like, excuse me, you're insulting my dying grandma.
I'm insulting your technical skills of you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You obviously don't know. I don't know how you passed freaking web design without taking any kind of like criticism on the way there, because that's exactly what they do in art, is criticized in order to make you better, which is why I got out of art.
I doubt she has a degree in web design. She probably like read some HTML book 20 years ago or something.
She probably took lessons from Mason.
Yeah. That's a bit unfair to Toon Radio. It's a little bit better designed than Toon Zone.
Yeah, you gotta give it that. I think like maybe Mason had an epiphany like, oh my god, this is bad. I gotta go back and redo this. I need to better myself. Slowly but surely, he's getting there. I gotta get him that.
So I guess for a final closing remark, we're still going. We've got a Mason, some Mason tweets I'll read. Because recently he, I guess, lost his internet again.
Well, his house got broken into again, too.
Right.
That makes it, what, four or five times already?
Yeah, probably a half dozen times he's gotten it broken into.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find the tweets where he talks about that. Because, here's one. We'll be walking home in a snowstorm. Didn't get the funding I wanted today, so I have to wait until next Monday to get my internet back. And that was on the 29th, 4 days ago. So, I guess like a week from Monday or something he'll be back. I don't know.
That'll be the 7th.
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm trying to find the ones where he talks about his house getting broken into, but it's been so many days that it's been down that it's hard to find. Mm-hmm. Out of money to go out for lunch, so I'm just sitting, relaxing my mind before I write more articles. That's a pretty sad tweet.
Oh, man.
Oh, and his brother, I think his brother got hit by a car and injured or something as well. It was one of his other problems that he's having.
That is also sad.
Yeah. Going to have to set up a donation thing for my brother, it seems, he says. Anyone need a small computer? And then he's got a Buffalo Craigslist ad.
Yeah.
Let me post that in the Slack chat, and we can put that on the show notes page so that people can buy Mason's computer if they want.
Okay.
I just put it on there.
All right, I
must be getting near it now. Apparently, my brother is injured, and unfortunately, I do not HAV, and then the tweet ends. I guess he was trying to say I don't have any money or something, but the tweet ended.
Ooh.
Boy, I just can't find the tweets about his house getting broken into. But basically what he said was something like his plumbing needed to be replaced. Because
that needed to be replaced 3 years ago.
Yeah, that too. I think the pipes keep freezing because he lives in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Which, it must be below freezing there all the time. Okay, here it is. Someone broke into my house. I'm waiting for police to arrive. I need a new door and a plumber.
That's so open.
Yeah, he's got a lot of problems, Mason.
Oh, all right. I think we need to shut this down.
Yeah, that's right. We've gone on an hour, and just the closing remarks is just as long as the actual episode.
Yeah. I mean, this has got to be like a 2 hour something podcast now.
Yeah. Okay. See you next time for probably the review of the series of Cobra. And if you want to know what we think about the actual episodes of Mobile Suit Gundam and Zeta Gundam, we previously reviewed the shows. So this time we mostly just talked about the special features and the way the Blu-ray discs were done.
Yeah, our episodes of the first Mobile Suit Gundam, I remember we had some people on from the defunct One Pixel Jump podcast, and we talked about everything but that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do remember that. Zeta Gundam, however, we talked about it on the Cybernauts cast when we started that up, and we did a decent review on that. So those actually are in our review section on our website, but I'll still like post a link for them in our show notes on this podcast, so you guys can hear whatever we said about them 4 to 5 years ago. and now that Right Stuff actually put out some info that they're going to get the first sets for Gundam X and Double Zeta, so we should be able to get those eventually down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I am more looking forward to Victory Gundam than anything.
Yeah, that will be nice to have out, and X as well. It's good to have stuff coming out that's never been released in the U.S. before. It would be nice if they sent Turn A as well to us, since that's already out.
Yeah, I mean, I plan on making a promo, like my own little promo for Right Stuff in this episode after we talked about it. So I think that's obviously the right thing to do, and I'll work on that after this recording, probably.
We could talk to Right Stuff about advertising on Tune Radio. All right, well, I guess that's it. See you next time for Cobra.
All right, later, guys.
They see me rolling, they hating, patrolling and trying to catch me riding dirty, 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 trying to catch me riding dirty. My music's so loud, I'm swinging, they hoping that they gon' catch me riding dirty, trying to 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 catch me riding dirty. They can see me lean, I'm tense, so it ain't easy to be seen. When you see me ride by, they can see the gleam. I shine on the deck in a TV screen. Riding with a new chick, she like cola. Next to the PlayStation controller, is a full clip in my pistola. Send a jacker into a coma. Girl, you ain't on crazy like crazy bone. Just trying to bone, ain't trying to have no babies. Ride clean as hell, so I pull in ladies. Laws on patrolling, you know they hate me.